Con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un sausage burrito es solo $1.50. Así que échale salsa picante o ketchup a tu sausage burrito con todo en McDonald's. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Welcome to the Games Gone podcast with me, Tom Ross. And this week, wow, what a player we've got to talk to. It's David Ned Kelly. Of course, too many clubs to mention them all, but of course you'd know him best from Warsaw, Wolves, West Ham, Leicester, Sunderland, Newcastle. I mean, Ned.
Tranmere, Sheffield United, Mansfield.
Yeah. Derry City. But you know what stood out when I checked the record, Ned? 744 games, 250 goals. Nobody does that. I mean, and remember, a sort of like an 18-year career.
Yeah.
Professional.
Not bad numbers. Yeah. Very fortunate, Tom, to be fair, that I wasn't injured very often. And also, the reason I've had so many clubs is because if the manager left me out and he told me that I wasn't going to be playing for a month, I wanted to leave.
You just wanted to play?
I did. I just wanted to play. I remember having an argument with Brian Little at Leicester. And he says to me, he says, Ned, he said, you've not scored for 7 or 8 games. So I'm leaving you out. He said, I'm going to play Colin Gordon. Flash win and goes and scores a hat-trick in the game that he left me out on. So on the Monday, I went to see him. I said, Gaffer, I said, listen, I said, if I'm not going to play, I said, I might as well leave. I said, because if you're not going to put me in. He went, Ned, he said, you've only been out for one game. I said, I know. I said, but Flash has scored, you know, he scored that trick and he's done brilliant. And 2 weeks later, I'd left and I was at Newcastle.
So, firstly, I know, obviously, Ned Kelly, but how did you get that nickname, Ned?
I've had it for ages. I think that it wasn't so much when I was at Warsaw in the very early days, because I was Kells or David or, you know, the occasional Ned came across, but I don't actually remember who called it me. I think it might have been Jerry Sweeney, who was Tommy Coakley's assistant manager, great guy Jerry. Yeah. I think it might have been him, but I don't know whether it stuck so much.
Everybody calls you Ned.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I'm applying for jobs and stuff, I have to put Ned Kelly because nobody knows who David is.
So you were. Let's talk about your start in your football, your career. I mean, you're a local lad, Wheelie Castle lad, but I think Bartley Green Boys was where it all started. And when? Because I know you went to West Brom Youth and stuff. So, but when did it become apparent? Hang on. I could make a living. When did that sort of...
I don't think that ever happened, to be honest. No, honestly. I played for Mickey Ball for Bartley Green Boys. Mick was the manager for years. Brilliant bloke, Mick. You know, and we were really good. I mean, we used to beat teams like 10-0 and 21-3 and stuff like that. Bartley Green Boys were a really good, you know, non-league team.
Jiggins Laneway.
Yeah. It is Jiggins Lane. Yeah. Jiggins Lane on the right. So, yeah, and he you know, I sort of gets into the school team, and then you get in the district team, and
always as a striker.
Always have a striker or a goalkeeper. I was always an emergency.
Get out,
Tom. Honestly, emergency goalkeeper. I'm good in goal now. I'm telling you, I can still dive. I can't get back up, but I can still dive.
And no running.
No, absolutely no. I can't do that. No.
So you were up there and West Brom, and was there lots of clubs interested?
It was funny really, because I went to the Albion. Academy system as such all those years ago for a couple of years, and at the end of it they said that I wasn't quite up to it when I was about 15. So like I was saying, that you know, I sort of play for the district and stuff, and a teacher of who was at my school at the time, a guy called Alan Miller, he was manager of the district team, and he was also manager of Alf Church's youth team. So there was a sort of link up at sort of 16, when I was 16, sort of 17. And I basically sort of carried on playing Sunday League football, and then, you know, got into the sort of the Alf Church's youth team, and all of a sudden, you know, you're playing a better standard, a better quality, and went to Warsaw on a trial, went to Wolves on a trial, you know, and... Yeah, but ultimately carried on playing for Alf Church. Mm. And so there wasn't really a you know, I'm going to make a living out of it. It was just the fact that I just wanted to play football.
Who was your inspiration, though, as a kid?
Oh, Cyril, big Cyril, without doubt.
Your hero?
Absolutely, 100% my hero. I absolutely love Jimmy Howard.
Not a bad choice if you don't mind me saying.
Yeah, I mean, what a player and what a man, of course, and yeah. You know, absolutely sadly missed. But my cousin and I, Colbert, used to go down the Baggies, and Cyril was both of our heroes, really, I suppose. And fortunate years and years and years later, ended up sitting next to him in the dressing room at the Molyneux, which was ironic.
Meeting your heroes, they say you should never do, but how big was that meeting, Cyril and Pete, sitting next to him?
I remember saying to Andy, because I think it was Graham Turner that signed. Was it Graham Turner that signed or Graham signed? Was it Turner or Taylor?
Turner.
Well, yeah. I remember saying to Andy Thompson, I said, I can't believe it. I said, Cyril Regis is going to sign for us. Like, I'm an Albion fan playing for the Wolves. Yeah. Cyril's an Albion legend just about to sign for the Wolves.
Oh, Cyril joining. I think that might have been Graham Taylor.
I think you're right.
Years have moved on, by the way.
But exactly. I said to him, I said, I can't believe it. Cyril Regis said he was my boyhood hero. And we're training at the old complex years ago that the Wolves used to have. And I remember moving all my clothes when Cyril came in. I don't know who was sitting next to him, but so I could sit next to him. I literally moved all my gear to go and sit next to Cyril when he
came. Funny man as well, by the way. He could be really funny.
He was sharp as they call. Hysterical, yeah. He could put you down quite quickly.
Well,
yeah.
I remember saying to him as well, I said, Cyril, you played for Wolves, Coventry, Villa, West Brom, not Birmingham. This was only just not long before he died, and he went, still time. But that was the measure of the man. He was just so...
He was brilliant, you know, even...
To help you?
Yeah, he was, because, I mean, he was an older player at the time when he came to the Molyneux, and but you could still learn off him, of course, you know, you could still see what a quality player he was. You know, I would just say that the same as all of us, you just lose your legs a little bit, but you don't lose the fact that you can still play and you can still keep the ball and you can still pass and, you know where the goals are and you can still score.
I suppose really, though, you know, it's all about confidence football, I'm sure you'll know, but you look around your teammates and one of them, Cyril Regis, you're another foot taller, aren't you?
Well, I mean, we had good players. I mean, we were fortunate at the Molyneux because... Bully was there. Bully had been injured a little bit and was just coming back.
He was the top man at Wolves.
top man and top bloke. You know, and Don, Graham had sold Don Goodman. Yeah. Don was a fantastic partner to have for me because, you know, I played most of the games, a lot of the games, should I say, with old Ralphie. And he was brilliant. So we were really fortunate, you know. Jeff Thomas had come and Kevin Keane was there and Tomo was there and Stowey and, you know, a few of the old stalwarts as well.
Proper.
You know, yeah, we had a good team. We just couldn't quite get over the line with promotion.
Just before that, people may not realise, of course, before football, you also work for a living. I mean, these days they don't, but you also actually work for a living at Cadbury's.
I did, yeah. I loved it at Cadbury's. I went there as a 16-year-old and... I worked in a department called the returns department. If a pallet falls off a back of a wagon and breaks, all of that pallet comes back to the chocolate factory, to Cadbury's. And they basically unwrap it. And it was all guys that had industrial accidents and heart attacks and minor health problems. Yeah. And they used to just like open the chocolate, put the chocolate in one bin, the paper in another bin. And I used to organise them. It was brilliant. It was between 16 and 18. The time at Cadbury's was fantastic.
Turned pro, I think, 18, wasn't it, at Walsall? 18?
Yeah, went to...
Was it Alan Buckley then?
Yeah, Buck was the manager. We played...
You didn't have to negotiate with Ken, did you?
No. Mr. Weldon. I was frightened to death of Mr. Weldon. I was. He was a scary...
He had that bit about him.
He was a scary guy, yeah. I think I only ever spoke to him once, and that was, thank you very much, after you'd given me the contract.
Well, I mean, to be fair to him, he was into his horse racing, as you know, and I remember once him saying to me, how much money you got, you cheeky bugger? He said, my horse, one for the pot, he called it. He said, it's going in. Now, I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know horse racing. But I put a fiver on it. 25 to 1 it won. But he knew it was going to win.
Yeah.
No, I don't know whether he's dodgy.
I don't know whether that was crooked or not, of course. Yeah, but he was, you know, I didn't know him. He was in those days, you never went to the boardroom. The only time you went to the boardroom, if you were getting a transfer out of the club. Yeah. So I went to Walsall. We played Sheffield Wednesday at Hillsborough in a youth cup game, and Walsall beat Sheffield Wednesday 3-2 and I scored two. And on the coach coming back, I'd played four or five games for them. On the coach coming back, Buck said, he said, we're going to offer you a contract. Well, and I was like, you know, sort of thinking, God, this is it. I'm going to become a football player, a real one.
Yeah.
You know, not playing with my mates at Sully Oak Park anymore. a real football player. And went home. Obviously, no mobile phones and all that sort of stuff. You know, went home, got dropped off at Fellows Park, got the bus back into town, and got the bus out of town back to Weary Castle. And I remember waking our mum up and saying to our mum, Walsall have offered me a contract. And she went, right, that's really, really good. She said, what is it? I said, I don't know.
You didn't know what was
I hadn't got a clue. He just said that he was going to offer me a contract for me to come in with my parents the next day. So that's what we did. Yeah, and I took a pay cut.
No way.
I did, honestly. I was on 75 quid at Cadbury's, and I took, Buck offered me 50 quid, and I said to our mum, I said it's a big difference, 75 to 50, mum, you know.
Massive.
And do you know what she said to me? She said, you better ask him for a bus pass, because a bus pass was seven and a half quid. Because I've got no way of getting
no car or anything.
No car. I hadn't even got a licence. Got nothing. So I couldn't get there. So I said to Buck, I said, can I have a bus pass as well? And I remember him looking at Ken Weldon, and Ken Weldon with his big cigar, there was smoke all over the room and all that sort of stuff. And he went, go on then. And that was
big
it.
Big deal, like.
Big, yeah, 50 quid and a bus pass.
But your time at Walsall, I mean, Buck and Gary Pendry were, I thought, a great duo.
Yeah, they were. You know, they were super people as well. Not just good coaches and knew the game. You know, I mean, Buck was still playing when I first went there. You know, and arguably, apart from again him not being able to run very quickly, he was, you know, he was one of the better players
and a finisher like yourself.
Yeah, he could always score. Yeah, but Pendo was a really good foil to him. You know, and then you know, sadly they left a couple of years later, and then. Tom and Jerry Sweeney came. Tom and Jerry.
I know, I can't. But they're just under that Buck system. I mean, the players you had. I love going to Walsall. I mean, they had Summerfield, Moa, Reece, Little Preecy, of course. Yeah, rest his soul.
Shakey.
Ronnie Green. Good players. Yeah.
Colin Brazier. Yeah. Peter Hart. Yeah. You know, we had some really, really good players.
Characters.
Yeah. Definite characters.
Well, I was on the end of it, I know. Nicking all the wheels off me. And I think you might have had something to do with it, but all my wheels
I was there. I can't say that I was involved with it.
All my wheels nicked off the radio car at BRMB. But I loved them because they were all proper. But I tell you what, we talk about togetherness. That was proper, wasn't it, that togetherness?
Yeah, they were. I mean, we used to, you'd train Monday, Tuesday, off Wednesday, train Thursday, Friday, game Saturday. You know, or if there was a cup game on the Tuesday, you'd just have the Wednesday off. But if there was no midweek game, we used to go across the road from Fellows Park into the pub on a Tuesday. And I remember Reece saying to me, come on, he said, we're going across. Reece picked me up by this stage, you know, we were pals and stuff. And, you know, so my £7.50 for my bus pass was like in my wages. But Reece used to come and pick me up, and we'd go in the pub on the Tuesday afternoon, and they'd have like half a dozen pints. And it was just like a social, because you were off on the Wednesday, so you could sleep it off. But the whole of the team would turn up. You know, you'd probably have between 10 and 15 players in the pub, just having a drink and a social, and you know, laughing a joke and a game of pool and darts and whatever. It was brilliant upbringing for me, because it got me closer to the older generation guys that were there. And you know, they taught me an awful lot.
I used to come and watch your training in the car park.
Yeah, at the back of Fellows Park. Yeah. It was like gravel, wasn't it?
Gravel, shale.
Shale and holes everywhere. I mean, health and safety, it'd be all over it now, wouldn't they?
Wouldn't be allowed today, would it?
No, absolutely not. You know? I mean, even going and training over the bridge.
Yeah, over the bridge.
You know, I mean, we used to kick the ball over the fence. It'd be on the train line. Just go and fetch the ball back. You know, if you kicked it over, Alan Buckley and Pendo would say, go and fetch it. You'd be waiting for the train to come past to pick the ball up.
But it was a successful team, wasn't it? It was a good team to watch.
You
played.
We were a good team. You know, Buck played a good way. He wanted to pass. Mm. You know, he wasn't a long ball coach by any stretch of the imagination. You know, and to be fair to Tommy, when Tommy came in as well, Tommy was exactly the same. He wanted us to play well. He obviously wanted clean sheets and for us to score.
That he seemed to get the best out of you, Tommy Coakley.
Yeah, well, I enjoyed working for Tom. And Tom and Jerry. It sounds like a cartoon group, doesn't it? But yeah, but I did. You know, he said to me in the pre-season that I was gonna play. In all of the teams that I've ever been at, I just wanted to play.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't. With all due respect to the reserve team, I didn't want to play for the
rotation.
Reserve.
Wouldn't have suited you.
No rotation. I wouldn't fit into a rotation system. If somebody says to me, "Come and play for City and play 30 games," or you know, go to wherever, go Villa or anywhere else,
and
play 48. I'd rather go and play the 48.
You'd rather play the 48.
Yeah, I'd rather play all the games than sit and watch.
Crazy. But you were that. I was there that day that the helicopter landed. Yeah. Teddy Ramsden. What did the players make of all that?
I don't think anybody knew what to make of it, Tom. To be honest, it was like a whirlwind, wasn't it? I mean, you know, football clubs getting sold was absolutely nothing to do with anybody. Yeah. It wasn't really the done thing. You know, as we know, like, you know, lots of people own clubs for long periods of time. It passed down for families and stuff. But you know, there was financial difficulties, and Terry Ramsden came in on his helicopter and landed on the middle of the pitch. It was just surreal.
Crazy. I mean, you don't see many helicopters in Walsall, do you?
Absolutely. I actually said to him, because he'd done it a couple of times, and at the third time after I'd met him, I said to him, I said, "Chairman," I said, "is there any chance of me having a go in your helicopter?" True story, Tom. He went, "What do you mean?" I said, "I've never been in an helicopter. Can I have a go in your helicopter?" And he went, "No, of course you can't." He says, "You can't just go up and down in an helicopter." He says, "You've got..." I says, "Come on." I said, so he gets me in.
No way.
Takes off, drives around Walsall, drops back down onto the pitch. I get out and he goes back to wherever he was going to.
Because he was another big horse racing man, wasn't he?
Oh,
horse racing. But I remember... Gary Pendry, because I did a podcast with Gary Pendry recently, he was telling the way they were treated then. Terry Ramsden came in, but paid them up, and off they went. And most managers and most players, if you pay me up, don't have a problem, you know. But it was tough because they were popular, and it left Tommy Coakley with a big job to win fans over. But he soon did.
He did, yeah. You know, and it's very different now than it was all those years ago. You know, you know, sacking's a part of coaching. Yeah. You know, I've been coaching.
It's a guaranteed part.
It is, yeah. I've been coaching best part of 20 years now, and I've lost my job 4 or 5 times. You know, so it is what it is, and nobody sees it as a detriment to your coaching ability. It's just different opinions and different things that change. But back then, I can remember it being real big news that Book and Pendo had left. But as I say, you know, I got on well I got on well with Book and Pendo, and also I got on well with Tommy and Jerry.
As your job, you should get on with the people you work for.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, you want to play for the club, you know.
You got promoted, didn't you?
We did. We done really well. We you know, Tommy brought a load of players in, a load of new players, freshened the squad up. You know, and we ended up playing Bristol City in the playoffs at the end of the season, drawing home and away, and tossing the coin to see who was going to play at home for the next game. That's how basic it was. Yeah. We won the toss for us to play at Fellows
Park. Hell of a game for you, third one.
Yeah, it was good, yeah. You know, on the Tuesday, and of course I was fortunate enough to score a few goals.
Hat trick, wasn't it?
Yeah, and get promoted, yeah. So brilliant times.
So that was promotion for Walsall, but West Ham, did Walsall need to sell you then? Did they need the dough?
I think it was, because I'd had there was a lot of interest, and, you know, what do they call it, hot property and all that sort of stuff. So they'd agreed a fee with 4 or 5 different clubs. I went and spoke to, I went to Bayern Munich, I went to speak to Derby at the time. You know, the agent was speaking to Liverpool and Tottenham, went and spoke to Terry Venables, who was Tottenham manager, and ended up picking the Happy Emmers with John Lyle. Yeah.
Who'd been there a long time, hadn't he, John?
Yeah, I mean... John lasted probably about 6 or 7 months after I got there. I didn't, you know...
It wasn't your fault, I hope.
Well, hopefully not. If you speak to an awful lot of West Ham fans, you would say that me not scoring many goals didn't help.
You won't remember. I remember reporting for BRMB, and I'm on the M11, coming off the M20, down the M11. Beep, 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 beep. it's you. And you remember waving me. Yeah. And you took me all the way into the ground and parked me. I couldn't believe it. I've never felt so lucky.
I got you to follow me because you hadn't got a clue where you were going.
No sat navs then, by the way.
No, absolutely no sat navs.
But I was surprised. I thought West Ham, their footballing credentials. Yeah. I thought you'd have been, you ran. I'm not blowing smoke up your backside, but you ran with the ball like a Rolls Royce, you know what I mean? And people, so I thought you'd suit West Ham.
I found it difficult going to West Ham, massively difficult, and I would say it's the only place that I went to that I didn't enjoy.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't enjoy it at all. And you don't know what to expect, of course. You hope that the dressing room are great and everybody's. But what I found when I got there was there was a huge, in my opinion, there was a huge void in the dressing room. There was an awful lot of older, experienced players: Alan Devonshire, Phil Parks, Alvin Martin, Tony Gale. A lot of players who were sort of coming to the end of their time, and then a gang of young players coming through: Dixie and Paul Ince and Stevie Potts, Georgie Paris, and there was nothing in the middle.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it was as if I felt as if it was, there was like a little bit of a split in the dressing
room. Them.
Yeah, because the young players were all coming through and the money was rising. The older players were all coming up to retirement sort of ages, and their value was decreasing. And I think John got caught in the middle, of that really. And I mean, John, I had three managers at West Ham in the space of less than 12 months. John was manager. John signed me. Lou Macari came in, who I didn't enjoy working.
He does like running.
Well, I don't mind running, so I'm all there for the running. I haven't got a problem with that, but I didn't like Lou's methods at all. And then Billy came in. Billy Bonds was a legend of the
Hammer's
football
legend.
Club. Yeah. And a brilliant fella, a real brilliant fella. And he brought me in the dressing room. He said, it's not really worked for you. He said, we've had a bid off Leicester City. He said, we're going to sell you. I said, fine, Bill. I said, thanks very much. I said, thanks ever so much for, your honesty. I'll go and speak to Pleaty, which I did, and loved Pleaty. Yeah. Pleaty was brilliant.
Proper football man.
Yeah, good, yeah. Knew everything about everybody, all the stats and all the quirks about whatever football is about and how to do it. And I quickly left. And it was funny because a few years later, Billy phoned me up. He was manager of Millwall. He phoned me up to try and sign me. Ironically,
so you made an impression on him.
Yeah, though. I did. Yeah, as I say, I liked him because he was pretty blunt. It just didn't, for whatever reason, it just didn't happen at West Ham. And I can honestly say that's the only place that I didn't feel as if I belonged, really.
Yeah. At Leicester, though, when David had gone, I mean, you I suppose played for Brian Little.
Yeah. Well, Colin Lee came in short term. And then Brian came in. I really loved it at Leicester. I did. It was like a breath of fresh air. There was a different vibe in the dressing room. All the players were all in. And
need that, don't you? Because you're that sort of person.
Well, I'm excitable, Tom, aren't I? I'm always busy. I'm always, trying to find the best of things. And, I don't look for downsizes downsides of anybody.
No.
I look for the positive of everybody, and I'm very much, and I have been with my coaching career, and how I manage and coach players is that I'm all in for the group and the collectiveness, not for the individual part.
The only way you'll win, collective.
Yeah, hopefully, hopefully that's the case, isn't it?
But Brian Little, of course, Villa, and John Gregory with him, who was a character in his own right, John.
Yeah. Gregors was assistant to Brian. Brian was good. I mean, remember, we're at Filbert Street, and I'd scored two. And remember Roger Milford, the referee?
Yeah, Roger Milford, the ref, yeah.
Roger was reffing a game, and I've looked over at the bench, and me number's come up. So I'm thinking, nah, that can't be right. So
hat-trick on the cards,
I've got an hat-trick here, yeah. He can't be bringing me off. So I've looked across again, and I thought, no, it is. So Roger came over, he went, Ned, he said, you've got to get off. I said, I ain't going off. I said, I'm on hat-trick here. I said, I've got two goals. So I'm in the middle of the pitch, and Brian's like waving to me to come off to me. And I'm waving back at him and saying, I ain't coming off, I'm on two goals, gaffer.
Yeah.
And he's going like this. Now he's getting the ump now because he wants me to come off. And I'm in the middle of the pitch, and it looks as if I'm sticking my fingers up to him.
All right.
Because I'm saying I've got two goals.
But people think you're telling him to.
Yeah, and I'm not. I'm saying I've got two goals, Gaffer. I'm on hat trick. So he's bought me off. So I'm about 10 yards away from the touchline now, and I says to him, I said, Gaffer, I said, I've got two. He said, I don't care. Come off. Get off. So I've stormed down the tunnel.
Oh, dear.
Into the dressing room. This is how it gets. Yeah. This is me losing
this
my
is
head.
You, yeah.
And I live in Epping, Essex, because I was down there at West Ham. Gets in my car with my kit on, my boots. takes all my clothes, throw my clothes in the car. I drive back to London, gets in the house. I open the door of the house, and my wife, Claire, goes, what have you done? I said, what do you mean, what have you done? She went, I've had the club on the phone. I went, Little, bringing me off when I was on that trick. She said, you're in tomorrow at 9 o'clock. So I had to drive back up on the Sunday morning. I drives onto the car park at Filbert Street, the old huge car park that used to be there. So I drove through one gate, and at the very same time, Brian is driving at the other end in through the other gate. So it's like a scene, like with these two cars driving towards each other. So we both get out the car at the same time. He opens the door and he went, Ned, and I went, Gaffer, and he went, what are you doing? I went, Gaffer, I was on a hat trick. I said, I was on a hat trick. He went, I know. He said, I was just trying to get you off. He said, just to give you a clap from the crowd. He said, I was just trying to kill the game.
Yeah,
he said, I was just trying to finish it all off.
I've heard that before, to get you applause.
Yeah, and I said, I don't want to clap off the crowd. I said, I want to score a hat trick. He went, that's why I done it. I said, well, you should have said that to me before. So we're talking about it, and he said, that's it. He said, we might as well both go home. You find a week's wages.
Did you find you?
Yeah, he did. He found me a week's wages.
And you didn't do anything but drive back and go home.
Yeah. And I went, oh, come on, Gaffer, that's a bit unfair. He said, you can't be doing that. He said, it looked like you were sticking your fingers up to me. Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. Absolutely fair enough. Once he'd explained it, no worries.
Did you get on with John Gregory?
I like Gregors, yeah. I like Gregors, yeah. It was a sort of different relationship that I had with Brian and with Gregors. Because if I'd got an issue, you know, sometimes you go to the assistant manager, you know, I used to just go straight to Brian.
Yeah.
But I like Gregors. I thought he was a good coach, that's for sure.
Yeah. As I said, he has his own personality, doesn't he, Gregory? He went on to be a manager.
Been great at Villa, yeah, you know, done really well. Yeah. So, you know, worked at a lot of good clubs.
Good player as well, John.
Excellent player.
But then
not as good as Brian. Brian was
a different class.
Oh, he was good. He was decent for the Villa.
And then it was not long and you're on the move again.
Yeah.
For big fees. You're moving for big fees.
Yeah. Well, he'd left me, as I said, for Flash. And I said to him, you know, I said, I can't. If I'm not going to play, I've got to go. And remember getting a telephone call from Aussie Idealist.
Wow.
I mean, he's only won the World Cup, hasn't he?
Unbelievable player.
It's not bad, is it?
Yeah.
And he phoned me up. He says, come and meet me. So I drove up the A1N to meet him at a hotel on somewhere just south of Durham, I think it was. Obviously by somewhere where he lived, nowhere near, you know, Willie Castle, where I was. Yeah. and he said, the club's in transition. He said, I need somebody to keep us up. He said, I need some goals from somewhere.
Yeah.
And he said, we've got a good team. He said, we've got a good squad. He said, and in the summer, he says, we're gonna improve the squad. And like, I remember phoning my Uncle Ronnie and saying, Newcastle have come in for me. He went, you got to go. He said, don't worry about the money. He said, don't worry about anything. He said, go. He said, if you become a number nine at Newcastle and you do well for them, he said, you'll be remembered forever.
Malcolm McDonald and Shearer and all the rest of it, all been heroes, the number nines.
All the big names, yeah, and that was it. And, you know, sadly, Ozzy got the sack later in the season, you know. Then King Kev came in.
I mean, another legend, by the way. Yeah. You've played for some.
I've been really fortunate, the people I've played for, definitely. Kevin was brilliant. I love Kevin. Absolutely loved him. He was just a whirlwind, you know. He really was. He just took the club and, you know, and ran with it. Sir John Hall, the backing of Sir John Hall, what a bloke! What a fantastic man, you know. And he just went, right, Kevin, there's all my money, spend it.
I mean, the support there was phenomenal, wasn't it?
They're incredible. Kevin's first game, we played Bristol City, and I scored a couple actually on the day. I think we beat Bristol City 3-1 or 3-0, and St James's was rammed. I'd never seen a crowd in it.
No.
Since I'd been there, there'd been 8s, 9s, 10s.
That was Kevin Keegan coming.
And Kevin came back, and the City just took off. Wow. Absolutely took off, and they just backed him completely, the board.
And again, we're on the move.
Yeah. I get player of the season, I get top goal scorer, we win the league after, we won the first 10 games, that season we won the first 10 games on the spin, and then we'd won the league by start of April, I think it was, at the time. We'd won it, you know, really comfortably. I'm thinking, right, Premier League next year, brilliant, what an opportunity. And I'm driving down the A1M, so I've got Azak was born in Newcastle, my son, at the time, just a few months before. And Kevin phones me up, I'm on the A1M, we have got mobile phones then, you know, them old bricks that we used to have. You used to charge up and they used to last about a minute. And he phoned me up and he said, where are you? I said, I'm going down the A1M. And he said, can you come and see me? I said, not really, Gaffer. I said, I'm 130 miles away. And he said, we've had a bid for you. I said, so I'm going. And he said, pull over. He says, and I'll explain. So pulled over into this lay-by on the A1M and phoned him back. And he said, I'm signing somebody else, Ned. He said, and I know full well, he said, that if I say to you that you're going to be on the bench for most of next season...
He knew you then.
Yeah, he said, you're not going to be happy. He said, and I can't guarantee, he said, you're playing. I went, well, who are you signing? He said, I can't tell you. He said, he ain't gone through yet. I said, where am I going? He said, well, you can go and speak to Graham Turner at the Wolves. I said, great. I said, brilliant. You know, I'll go and speak to him. I said, but I ain't going unless you tell me who you're signing. He said, I can't. He said, because the deal's not sorted out. I said, well, I ain't going then. He went, Ned, stop being a...
I can imagine.
Something on your backside. He said, just go. I said, I want the last year of my contract. I said, I'm not going. I said, I'm not going without my money. I said, I'm not going unless you tell me who it is. Go and speak to Graham Taylor. That's Graham Turner, sorry. Has a conversation with him, brilliant. All goes lovely, brilliant, lovely bloke. Has a conversation about me being an Albion fan at the Wolves and all that sort of stuff. No issues, fantastic club. Phone Keegan up and said, Gaffer, so what do you think? He said, I can't tell you, Ned. He said, I can't tell you. He said, I'll tell you if you promise me you'll never tell anybody else. I said, go on then. I said, I promise you. I said, my words, you know, I said, I won't tell anybody, I promise you. He went, I'm signing Peter Beasley. I went, Gaffer. I said, I'd sell David Kelly for Peter Beasley.
What a player, Peter.
He burst out laughing. He went, I know. He said, Peter Beasley. He said, what a signing for Newcastle. Yeah.
So, and it was a signing for Newcastle.
Oh, he was, yeah. He was. Ironically, the ironic part about it, if I'd have stayed, Peter fractured his cheekbone in the pre-season game.
That's right, he did, yeah.
And he was out for 3 months. And Newcastle went and signed a lad out of Scotland to play for those 3 months. So if I'd have stayed, I'd have played in the Premier League for the first 3 months.
Wolves it is, Wolves, and Graham Turner. And of course, didn't give you a chance to reunite with Gary Pendry, did it?
Yeah. I mean, Wolves was a different club when I first signed, you know. The stand was just being built behind the goal and...
They were in transition.
They were in massive transition, yeah. Still got good players. Yeah. Still got good players at the club, Tomo and Bully and Stabby and, you know, the likes of that. But they were in a transition and, you know, there was the board was sort of trying to back him, but, you know, Graham had been there quite a while. You know, and ultimately, results were indifferent, I would say.
After a lot of success coming from the fourth division.
I mean, Bully had scored
50 a season. 50-50-50.
You know, one of the greatest goal scorers ever. You know, irrespective of what league. Yeah. That makes absolutely no difference. You've still got to score. You know. And the squad was a different type of squad as well. And, Graham Turner, you know, ended up getting sacked, months and months later. Which was sad because he was a good guy.
He was one of the game's nice guys, Graham.
Super fella. Along with, you know, Pendo as well. I have been fortunate over the years. I've clashed and been friends with so many good people in football. And, you know...
Most people in football are decent.
Yeah. It's just spoiled by a few nutcases. Every now and again, of course.
So in comes Graham Taylor.
Yeah, brilliant.
Was he good for you?
He was great for me. he was great for me. As I said earlier on, I was really good in goals because, you know, I used to do that.
I still can't imagine it, but go on.
And we used to do a penalty competition. So I'd go in, three penalties, whoever take it, three penalties for a tenner. If I save one, you give me the tenner. If you score three, you get,
you get the tenner back. Yeah.
And he used to take money off the players all the time. And Graham, I remember Graham coming down to the training ground and running on. I've got my gloves on and Mark Rankin's trying to take a penalty. Well, Mark Rankin had 10 to 2 feet, didn't he? You know, his feet were all over the place. He wasn't a great penalty taker. So Ranks, he used to take a bit of money off Ranks and Darren Ferguson, and it's, you know, quite lucrative, really. And he come running on the training ground and he says, Ned, what are you doing? I said, Gaffer, I said, I'm your best player. I said, you know, I said, I'm just going in goals at the moment. So he took a penalty against me.
Graham Taylor did.
Took a penalty against me. Smashed it in the top corner. I never got anywhere near it. He went, right, so that's the last you're going in goal. Get out.
Did he?
Yeah.
Did you give him a tenner?
I didn't give him a tenner because he only took one. If it had took two more, I might have saved one of them.
But he was...
But he smashed it in the top. But he was brilliant. Great coach. Really, really...
Did you enjoy your time at Wolves?
I really did enjoy my... as everybody knows, I'm an Albion fan. I loved it at the Wolves. Yeah. Not my pals who when I say that, they say, oh, you can't love it at the Wolves. And
I know.
Load of rubbish.
Exactly what you mean.
You absolutely can. You know, it's a huge club, good support base. You know, and it was, you know, Graham Taylor had come in and it was going places. You know, he was signing Jeff Thomas and Don Goodman and, you know, Tony Daly, Stevie Froggitt. You know, all these players that were going to take the club to the next level. And it was really exciting times, you know. And he was really, really unfortunate with the John McGinn incident at Bolton in the playoffs.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. Is that the one who smacked you on?
Yeah. You give me a little bit of a right hook.
Yeah.
I think if I was in a boxing match, I don't think I'd have gone down. But when you're on a football pitch and somebody punches you and it's in the penalty box.
Yeah. I remember the incident. Yeah. I couldn't remember his name. I've been a note here, but I couldn't remember his name. John McGinn.
Big John, yeah. I've seen him a few times since and we have a giggle about it.
What caused that then?
It was just an argument. We had a corner, there was an argument at the front. In those days, you could kick people, you know, you're not allowed to kick anybody anymore, and you could scratch people and, you know, and poke people, and it was just part and parcel of the game, you know. It was just part of the gamesmanship. And something had happened, and to be fair to Johnny, turned around and gave me a right hook. and I say to this day, the referee was no further away than 2 yards. He saw what happened. He saw everything that happened. It was a penalty. It was a stonewall penalty.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I was in the press box and nobody could believe it.
Yeah. And it's you know, history states that John stays on the pitch, doesn't get sent off. He scores a goal that ultimately knocks us out. And, you know, that's the look of you know, refereeing decisions at times.
I don't know whether it's luck or bad refereeing either way, though.
Yeah, yeah. I think the refereeing was poor, you know. But
you hit the nail on the head. They just made me think they're talking about it because you played, you got 250 goals in 700-odd games at a time when people not only could kick you, did kick you, tackled you from the back, the front, the side.
Yeah.
In tight areas when corners were taken, there was an elbow flying somewhere, the keeper had not... You had to perform in that arena. What would you have done today with referees looking after you?
Well, you can never judge whether that you could be the player now in this type of football.
Well, good pitches, referees looking out, nobody tackling you.
Yeah, I know, but it's a different game. The games move forward. The games change. All different generations of different players, you know, say that, you know, could you have played now? I'd like to have played now, purely and simply because of the money.
Money.
But ultimately, you know, I'm proud of the career that I've had, you know, because I've been very, very fortunate, you know, that I've played so many games for so many fantastic people and managers and clubs. I've been at huge clubs, you know.
Massive clubs, massive.
You know, I went to Villa the other day to watch Newcastle play, and my son says, get us tickets in the Newcastle end. So, Cole Darlow, and I'm in the Newcastle end, and the Newcastle fans are, you know, boisterous, to say the least. And
they do like a sing song.
Yeah, it was fantastic, and it was brilliant to be welcomed by them, you know, having played so many years ago. Yeah. You know,
you mentioned managers. I mean, you played Jack Charlton, World Cup.
Yeah,
what was it? Your first call up to the Republic. I mean, what was that about?
Yeah, well, we were playing at Rotherham, and Tommy was manager of Wolves at the time, and Tommy said, somebody wants to speak to you upstairs, Ned. I went, right, okay, who is it? He said, you just got to go into the boardroom Well, of course, you don't
players
go.
Never went the boardroom.
You don't go boardrooms. No. Yeah. And I went, oh, Gaffer, I can't go in the boardroom on my own. And he went, and Tom Bradley was there.
Tom Bradley, great guy, Tom.
Lovely, brilliant guy, Bradders. So he says, Bradders will take you. So I'm walking up with Bradders. And I said, who am I supposed to be seeing here? He said, I don't know. He said, I don't know. He said, he ain't told me. Gets to the boardroom, opens the boardroom. So this lady opens the door and she went, hello. And I've got my Walsall tracksuit on and I'm going into the Rotherham boardroom. And she said, oh, yeah. So she takes me in. And I'm looking at this, like, as you know, Tom, you've been in more smoke everywhere, cigar and cigarette smoke everywhere. And Jack Charlton and Morris Setters, Jack's assistant, are sitting at the bar.
Ex-West Brom legend.
Yeah, of course, Morris, yeah. Bless him, he's... Loved Morris, great guy. Mm-hmm. And so I've gone up and I went... So he's turned round, he's literally turned round on the half shoulder to me and he's looked at me. So he's got his cigarette in one hand, his pint in the other hand. He's having a swig of his pint and then he's having a puff of his cigarette. He went, hello, son, well played. I said, thanks. I said, thank you very much. He said, this is Morris. I said, hello, Morris, nice to meet you. Obviously, you know, West Brom legend and all that sort of stuff. And he said, well, do you want to come and play for us then, son? And I went, what do you mean? he said, we're manager and assistant manager of Republic of Ireland. He says, you know, he said, your family's from Dublin. He said, do you want to come and play for us? I said, can I ask you the question? He said, yeah. I said, is it the first team or the under-21s? He says, no, he said, it's the first team. We're playing Israel in a couple of weeks' time. I said, yes, I do. I'm in. I said, am I going to start? He said, well, you'll start the first game. He says, but we'll see how it goes after that.
Is that, you asked him?
I asked him if I'd start, yeah. Because I thought to myself, during the week, I got a call up to the England under-21s to play against Czechoslovakia, which is like obviously two separate countries now. And I got a letter to invite me to wherever it was to go and play for the under-21s. And I did. I said, is it for the first team or is it for the 21s? And he went, no, it's for the first team. And I went, right, I'm in, definitely, I'm in. So I goes outside, again, no mobile phones. I'm thinking, I've got to tell my dad.
Tell me, dad, yeah.
I've got to tell my mum, you know, I've got to tell my sisters. got nobody to tell. So I get back on the coach, and Reese says to me, so what are you doing? What happened? I said, Jack Charlton. He said, the Ireland manager. I said, yeah. I said, he just asked me if he wanted to play for Ireland. And like, Kenny's there, and Reese is there.
Giving you,
and they're going, you don't want to play for them. What do you want to play? And I'm going, of course you do. Of course you do. I said, it's a first team. It's not a 21 game or an 18 game or anything like that. I said it's proper international football. I said, I got to phone my dad. Can't we drive all the way back to Best to Fellows Park? Gets all the way home. Gets back to the phone. Phones my dad up, and I mean, he's made up.
Beyond,
can't believe it. Yeah. You know, and then a couple of weeks later, we all fly over and...
Did your dad come and watch you?
Yeah. Uncles, aunts, nephews. Funny, because it was a great game and I was fortunate that I scored a hat-trick on my debut. We beat them 5-0. And getting on the coach to come back, and I've been introduced to Auntie Mary, my Uncle Tom, my Uncle Tony Kelly, my Uncle my nephews, my nieces, and all this associated family that I've now found.
Yeah.
they're all over the place. And I remember Jack saying to... Because they were all going back to the hotel. So we let all my family on the coach.
He never let your family on the team coach.
He did. He let them on the coach. And he was going to the lads, move up. David's... Because he was calling me... He's always called me David. David's family are coming on. Like, you lot, move up. Move up a bit. So my dad and my uncle and my aunts are on the coach going back to the hotel. You can't make it up, Tom.
Now, go on, tell me. Your dad said to Jack... Am I starting the second game? Did you?
No, I didn't. No. I got the ball under my arm, and you know, I was just that excited.
You can't do any better than that trick.
No.
Internationally?
No, I know. It was fantastic, and you know, I had 10 years with the national team. And
2 World Cups, by the way. Italia 90, what a World Cup that was for Ireland.
Brilliant. Euro 88.
With Ray Houghton and all that went with it. And of course, big Steve Staunton and stuff.
Yeah, Stan and Andy Townsend, Tony Cascara. You know, we had, and this was all down to Jack and Morris, we had a club vibe, a club togetherness, at international level.
But sometimes you don't get, because
when I was at Newcastle, there was myself, Liam O'Brien, and Kevin Sheedy, and we played at Newcastle, and we were going over to Ireland. You're supposed to be there on the Sunday, and we all used to go over, try and fly over on the Saturday night, so we could have a night out in Dublin
straight after the game.
Yeah, and then and go out. So we got to Manchester Airport, and Terry Feeling was there. Steve Staunton was there. There was about 12.
All the same idea.
There was about 12 of the squad because we could have a night out in Dublin. It was brilliant.
I mean, it was a great time with Jack, and I mean, he's revered. Were you in the party that went to see the Pope?
Yes. I was there, sitting in the front row. Yeah, I'm two rows to the two people to the right of Jack.
Wow.
Next to Chrissy Hewton. Yeah.
What a nice guy Chris Hewton is, by the way.
Brilliant guy. What a job he's done at lots of football clubs.
Unbelievable. And a top man, by the way.
Yeah, a really, really good guy. Really,
but with Ireland, you had one dark moment, I think I'll call it.
Yeah.
That was the Lansdowne riot, they called it.
I think that...
England.
Yeah, I think that changed stadiums forever.
Didn't you score?
I did. We were playing well. England were playing us, of course, and there was the issues at the start with the anthems and stuff like that. It's weird, Tom. I love national anthems.
Me too.
I think national anthems are awesome.
Make the hairs on the back of
your neck stand up. They're brilliant, whether it's Scotland, whether it's Wales, whoever it is, it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And I think they should be massively respected.
Yeah, of course.
You know. But there was an issue with the anthem, with the you know, the two anthems were booed by both sets of supporters, you know, not just by England, but by both sets of supporters. And it was, we were told since that it was premeditated that as soon as there was an incident. And of course, we were playing
Combat 18, I think it was the group.
Yeah. You know, and we were playing really well. I'd scored, and then within a minute or so of me scoring, the chairs were getting broken up, and the wooden boards and the metal panels were being hurled onto the pitch.
What was it like as a player, though?
Scary.
Was it?
Scary. There was things flying onto the pieces of wood, you know, 6 foot seat panels.
Could kill you.
Yeah. You know, if any of those metal rods and stuff like that they were throwing on would have hit anybody, it would have killed them.
It was a terrible moment. It was
scary. You know, and ultimately you get ushered off the pitch as a player. You know, everybody gets all the players. Jack was going mental, absolutely mental.
Well, he's English as well, managing Ireland.
Yeah, well, of course.
Well, you're English playing for Ireland.
Yeah, and he's trying to get everybody off. And he can't get everybody off because the Garda are trying to get him off because there's all these things coming down, and, you know, and bottles and, it was just a mess. It was just a complete mess. You know, it quickly came apparent that there's no chance that the game was going to carry on. Yeah. You know, the game was over. So, scored against England, beat them 1-0. Mm. The game still stands in our house. The goal still stands in my records.
Yeah. But it changed the face of football.
It did. It changed the face of stadia, CCTV for stadia. Yeah. You know, security at football grounds, security outside of football grounds, and of course there was then stadiums changed. People started building bigger and better, and more secure stadiums.
Yeah, one of the few people who. Newcastle and Sunderland. A short time with Peter Reid.
I did, again. No brainer. Graham Taylor says to me, he says, you know, Neddy said, I can't get three into two. And what he meant by that was Bully was fit, Don was fit, and he'd signed him, you know, and I was there. He says, and again, he said, I know that you're not going to be happy sitting around and being a sub and, you know, being a bit part player. He said, Rudy's phoned me. He said, Rudy wants to go and sign for him. I said, right, Sam. I says, I'll go and have a conversation with him. So again, back up the A1M to meet Rudy. Rudy, Kevin Bracewell, I'd played with Brace at Newcastle, and Brace was Rudy's assistant.
Right.
And, I met the two of them, and it was a no-brainer. The only thing I didn't want to do, I didn't want to go back to the Northeast. And the reason I say that is I'd moved back to Birmingham. I was living in Sutton Coldfield.
Didn't want to move again a bit.
I didn't want to do the driving again, and you know, we've got a young family, you know, and my little one was at nursery and was just about to go to school. But Reedy was Reedy, and he was, you know,
He's infectious,
yeah,
isn't he?
He was brilliant, and I thought, as soon as I met him, I thought, no, I want to play for him. He's really good. I like him.
Probably and a football man,
yeah,
was
he? Yeah, he is, yeah. He five-side competitions all the time, and, you know, all about the scoring, and a bit like Keegan, really. Don't worry about, you know, keeping the ball out the other end. We'll score more than them.
Yeah.
You know, albeit Reedy was defensively better than Kevin, because Kevin was all out of tech. So I went, and I got injured quite early on in my Sunderland days. I'd played a few games and got injured, and we got promoted, but I wasn't really part of that promotion winning team
because
I hadn't played, and I'd done my ankle. I'd been out for months with my ankle. We got in the Premier League, and then I played a lot of games in the Premier League for Sunderland, but I played as a right winger because he'd signed Niall Quinn and Paul Stewart.
Yeah,
you know, and Quinn had come in, and Stewie was there as well, and I tried to just fit in it. I wanted to play, and I, you know, really said, no, go and play right wing. So me and Darius Kubica, used to play for Villa.
I think he might have been at Villa.
Me and Darius used to play up and down that right hand side for Sunderland and do what we can. Yeah, so
but it was
really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed Reedy.
Yeah, I love him as a football man. But then it was Tranmere. You had a spell at Tranmere with John Aldridge. You went to Sheffield United with Neil Warnock. And then you went to Scotland.
I did. I went to
Motherwell.
To Motherwell with Bill. I played with Bill at Leicester, and he was manager of Motherwell. He'd had a good start to his managerial career, and he was trying to sort of change the type of player that Motherwell were getting, trying to get a better sort of standard of player, I would say. So I don't know why he phoned me.
Is that where you forged your relationship with him?
No, because he played for Leicester.
I was at Leicester
with him, and he came down from Scotland. He'd been abroad. I think he'd played in Sweden.
So he earned his stripes then.
Yeah. And he was a good little left-footed little midfield player, Bill.
Mm.
You know, he could play and make a pass. You know, he didn't have a fat lot of pace, but, you know, he could find a pass and play and stuff. But at the time, Martha, his wife, had some complications with childbirth and stuff like that. So I'd only been with Bill at Leicester for 6 months or so, and he went back up to Scotland.
Mm.
And then all those years later, you know, finally, went back up and
Was it a good time at Motherwell?
I enjoyed it when Bill was there. I didn't enjoy it when Eric Black took
over. Oh, no, Eric. Of course, he got to Birmingham with Steve Bruce.
Yeah, well, Eric had Terry Butcher with him. I didn't enjoy my time with Eric at all. So
sometimes it don't fit, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't. No, and I definitely didn't fit with him, and he definitely doesn't fit with me.
So out you went.
And yeah, so
is that your way though? You're not going to stick it if you?
No, very much so. I think that you know, if there's a
did he just not pick you or what? Was it?
No, I just didn't like him.
You didn't like him?
No, there was an incident that happened with a few young players.
That's unusual, though, isn't it? I mean, you leave clubs, but I don't remember you falling out with too many people.
No, not really, no. I just didn't like Eric, and that's it, really.
That's it, yeah.
There was an issue, as I say, there was an issue with some players and stuff. And I left, you know, and sadly for Motherwell, at the back end of that season, they sort of went into administration and stuff, and everything sort of, you know, sort of folded, and it became really difficult, which was a real shame, because it was a really good club.
Nice club, yeah.
I really enjoyed my time there with Bill. You know, but then, you know, I get a move and come back down.
Reunited with Stuart Wackis.
Yeah, Stewie. Well, I didn't know Stewie from Walsall. I was.
But he was at Walsall, wasn't he?
Stewie was at Walsall.
You didn't know him from Walsall.
No, Stewie was a bit younger than me, so I'd obviously left before he sort of we sort of crossed paths. But yeah, a very short period of time. I was only there for 3 months. You know. Mansfield got promoted, and I jumped on the bandwagon of a little promotion at the end of my career. Yeah,
and then off to Ireland.
Yeah,
and, I mean, success does follow you. I mean, you had a short time in Ireland, but tell us about your last game.
Yeah, well, the FAI Cup final versus Shamrock Rovers. Jim Roddy was the owner, and a guy who I knew at Tranmere was pals with Jim, and Jim had asked him if he thought that I'd go over. You know, sort of fly into Belfast, and then you know, sort of get the car down to Derry and play, and, you know, sort of see out my career, sort of thing. which I was happy to do. You know, I'd go over on a Thursday, then come back on a Saturday. It was, you know, it worked really well. But I only played half a dozen games for them. But the last game was the Irish Cup final. And then we beat Shamrock Rovers 1-0. I missed an absolute sitter, which still bugs the life out of me now, because I should have scored. My last game, I should have scored. But we won the Cup final. We all got a Cup final winner's medal.
Crazy. Scotland, yeah. Ireland.
Yeah, all over the place.
World Cups everywhere. And then you get into coaching. And I think you're a Port Vale caretaker for a while, was it?
Only briefly, yeah. For a short period of time. Michael Brown had got sacked, and Chris Morgan and I just took over very briefly. But the coaching thing came up from the Derry City thing, because Ray Mathias, who was my coach at Tranmere with John Aldridge, yeah. Ray had just taken over, and Ray gave me a call and asked if I'd come over and be assistant. And the agreement I got with Derry was that if I could get myself a coaching job, yeah. You know, they wouldn't stand in my way. And Jim Roddy, who was the owner and director and chairman of Derry City at the time, he shook my hand and said, you know, I wish you well. And I went off into coaching, and Ray was my first manager. And then ended up a couple of years or so later with Neil at Sheffield United.
Who you'd played for?
Yeah, well, I played at Sheffield United for him. Brilliant. Met up with Dev, of course, mad Dev. But it was funny, the Sheffield United thing came about because Kevin Blackwell went to Leeds as manager. And me and Dev and Sally and Claire and the kids were on holiday in Cyprus. Yeah. So Dev's had a few beers, as he very sometimes does. Not very often, but very sometimes. And it's on Sky Sports. We're in this bar with the kids playing pool and just by the beach and all that sort of stuff. And Dev is looking at the telly. And he went, Blackie's gone to Leeds as manager. And I went, oh, I said, right, I said... Yeah, I said, fair play to Blackie, you know, Kevin Blackwell. Yeah, yeah. Fair play to Blackie, what a, you know, a great opportunity. Yeah. And Dev, and I said, I wonder what Knocker's going to do about, you know, about his staff then. So we hadn't thought about anything like that, because I was at Tranmere, coaching at Tranmere. Yeah. So we're out on the night time, we've had a couple of beers. And Dev went, I'm going to phone Knocker. I said, Dev, you can't phone Knocker, you can't phone him up. I said, you can't phone him. He said, I'm going to phone him. He said, and tell him that you want the job. I said, don't do that. I said, I've got a job already. I said, please don't do that. So he doesn't listen, does he? He goes off and he said, I spoke to Knocker, he's going to give you a call. I said, Dev, you're off. I said, I've got a job. I said, I'm at Tranmere, I'm quite happy at Tranmere. I said, I don't need the Sheffield United job. And about a week later, we've come back off holiday and all that sort of stuff, and about a week later, Neil phones me. He said, I'm going to speak to Ray. You know, would you come up as assistant? Yeah, and it was... I drove down to Cornwall to his house to have me sort of... me formal interview as such. And he said... He said, I'm going to give you the job. He said, I'm quite happy what I've heard. He says, I know what you're about. He said, you know, I've worked with you. He said, I'm quite happy. He said, do you know any fitness coaches? I said, I do, actually. I said, Tony Daly. He went, we'll get Tony Daly to come down here next week, he says, and see if he wants to become a fitness coach as well. So on my way home from...
Tony's the fittest man I've ever met.
Tony is the nicest person in football.
Yeah, unbelievable.
And that's a big statement, yeah, that is. He is the nicest person in football, Dales. I love him.
Dodgy haircuts, let's be fair.
Dodgy knees.
Dodgy haircuts.
Dodgy legs. Have you seen the size of his legs in comparison to the rest of his
body? But he's ripped.
Oh, he is. He's ripped from his waist up. But so I phoned Dales. I went, Dales, what are you doing? He said, you know, I've just done so-and-so, so-and-so. I said, Knocker wants to have a chat with you about the fitness coach at Sheffield United. I said, you can't tell anybody. I said, but I've got the assistant manager's job. I said, so... He went, brilliant, yeah. He said, I'll go down and talk to you. And anyway, so that's how it got. Just a phone call after a phone call.
So how did it come linking up with Billy?
Well, I'd been at Sheffield for about 18 months or so. We'd just missed out the season before. And then in the summer, Stuart McCall was retiring. Still playing, but sort of retiring. And Neil had said that he was going to bring Macca onto the staff. And I said to Gaffer, I said, sound. I said, you know, I like Macca. Great kid. Great player.
Good player, by the
very
way.
Very good player. Before. Doesn't fall off cars very easily, mind, when Bradford get promoted and stuff. But people will have to look on YouTube for that. So Macca was coming onto the staff. And I was the couple of months that we were sort of together. I didn't feel like I'd got pushed out. I just thought my role had changed slightly.
Yeah.
You know, and ultimately, what happened after a couple of months was that Craig Brown got sacked by Preston. And Billy had said to me years and years before, you know, he said, if I can get another job at Motherwell, he says, you know, he said, are you interested in coaching, that sort of stuff? I said, well, you know, I obviously will be when I finish playing.
Yeah.
And literally, he got the caretaker manager's job, and he phoned me and he said, if I speak to Neil, I said, if I get the job, will you come with me? I said, well, I'll speak to Neil. And so I did.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing with football. There's no secrets in football,
no.
As we all know.
No.
You know, you can't go behind people's back.
No.
You know, it just doesn't work.
No.
You know, just be upfront with people and
correct.
People are fine about
yeah.
everything.
Normally
as,
they are, yeah.
Yeah, as we know, Tom, you know, we know that everything players get poached, coaches get, you know.
It happens all the time.
Of course it does. But as long as you're upfront and you tell them as soon as possible. So I went to Neil, I said, Bill's got an opportunity to get the job. I said, if he gets it, Gaffer, I said, are you okay if I, you know, if, he said, yeah, absolutely fine. He said, if he doesn't, he said, I'm more than happy for you to stay. He was brilliant, Neil,
yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. You know, I know he's not football supporters' favourite person, unless he's your manager.
Absolutely, every player I've known from Horsfield,
brilliant.
Devs, Ian Hamilton,
yeah.
Paul Pesci-Salida,
everybody
loved him.
Yeah, he's brilliant because he's straight down the line.
Yeah.
He really is, and he was brilliant with me, Neil, and he gave me the opportunity because sometimes at the start of the week Neil would stay in Cornwall, so I was learning my trade, I was learning how to coach, I was learning, you know,
yeah.
Especially at Sheffield United, I got brilliant players. I'd got Robert Page and Pesh and.
Yeah, that was manager, isn't he, Robert Page?
Yeah, Page, yeah. You know, so I've got good senior pros, and, you know, so when you're learning to become a coach, it's
you need them on side.
You need them on your side, yeah. And as well, when you mess it up, when you mess a session up,
yeah.
You know, they can come across and go,
yeah.
that didn't really happen, did it?
Yeah.
You know, you don't take offence to it, it just didn't work, so. But yeah, so it was, and I ended up going, Billy got the job, and then Billy, Julian Darby and Pete Williams, the three of us went to Preston with Billy, and it just exploded, and we had 10, 11 years as the four of us.
So why are you not in the game now?
Me or Bill?
You.
Me. Well, I left Northampton last year. I was with Keith, Curl,
yeah.
Who's done a really good job.
Ex-Wolves, of course.
Yeah, good player, yeah. Curly.
Tough as they
good,
come,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, good player, yeah. Good person as well. And I left, had a conversation with Keith for the reasons of why leaving. And, you know, I'm trying to get back in, applying for different various roles and stuff like that. So
how tough is it looking?
It's really tough at the moment, you know, with everything that's happened for everybody. You know, it's a tough environment. Mm-hmm. To be trying to get into, you know, player numbers are, especially lower down as well, player numbers are going to be smaller, coaching staff's going to be smaller.
Mm.
You know, it's different for the big boys, as we all know. The Premier League's completely different, but lower down the pyramid you go, staff sizes are smaller and stuff like that, so it's tough, but you know, you live in hope, Tom, don't you?
What are the, I mean, the sort of daft questions, who's the best player you played with?
I would say a mixture. I would say this about two. I would say Roy Keane and Paul McGrath.
And it's not bad, to be fair.
Yeah, and I would.
Paul McGrath, how good
yeah.
was he?
We played Manchester United in a game when I was at Walsall years ago, and he marked me, and I can remember him saying to me, "Will you stop running around?" And I'd been in the Ireland squad once, I think, and I'd only met him once or twice. And I said, "What do you mean?" He went, "Will you stop running around?" He said, "If you run around," he said, "I've got to run around after you."
Fair enough.
Yeah, absolutely fair enough. And I thought, that's a really weird thing to say to you, an opponent player. But yeah, I'd go for Paul. But Roy was on a different level. Roy came into the squad as a 20-odd-year-old, 21-year-old, whatever age he was. And you thought he'd been there after the first training session. You thought he'd been there all of his career. He just took over.
Did he?
He was the most professional ever.
You know, that comes across when I watch him on telly now talking. He places a lot of store on professionalism.
All of it. It was about, with Roy, one of my really good pals, Charlie McParland, worked with him. At Ipswich, and I'm not sure whether we went to Sunderland with him, but it was And Charlie says that, you know, his attention to detail, you know, all the good people that I've worked with, attention to detail is key.
Yeah.
You know, Billy was unbelievable. Mark Robbins is really good at it, you know. And, you know, and he just... I forgot my train of thought there.
Yeah, about Roy Keane and his detail.
And that was That was the thing about Roy. Roy was attention to detail, you know, and how he set up, how he played, how he spoke to players, how they trained, how professional they were, what they did outside the training ground, what they did when they got home.
Was he tough on his teammates?
Yeah. I can remember he'd come away with Ireland. It was boiling off. We were abroad somewhere and it was raving hot. And he's fired the ball into me and I've had a touch and it's like bounced off my foot. And he's gone, get hold of the ball. And I said, any chance of not smashing it so hard? Because it was like fired in at me.
Yeah.
He said, if you can't get hold of it at that speed, he said, there's no point, is there? And do you know what? I've been in the squad 3 or 4 or 5 years, whatever it is now. And I thought, you're absolutely right. If I can't control the ball off a pass like that, then I shouldn't be here.
Shouldn't be here. Yeah.
And he was absolutely spot on.
Yeah.
And I thought, I like you.
Yeah.
I like you.
Yeah. Who's the best you've played against?
Ooh.
And the toughest. Toughest and the best you've played against.
I think, going back to my Ireland times, I would say Kevin Moran.
Kevin Moran.
Kevin Moran, as a tough person.
Really?
And also...
Was he the first man to be sent off at Wembley in a cup final?
Yes, he was, Kev. Yeah. We used to call him Donald Trump back in the day because Kev used to own part and most of Dublin. he was an entrepreneur, Kev. Very savvy with a pound note.
But tough
as Alberts. And I would say... of a sort of a more recent generation, my pal Morgs, Chris Morgan.
Yeah.
Chris Morgan, when I was at Sheffield United with him, I worked with him with Brownie at Port Vale. Morgs was tough.
I remember Villa playing there, and Juan Pablo Angel took a liberty with him, and he chased him off the pitch at the end. He chased him.
That does not surprise me. And you know, I see Morgs, I speak to Morgs, we've got a group chat with him. He's brilliant, Morgs. He's an agent now.
Wow.
Morgs, an agent. Anyway, he's just rock hard.
Yeah.
You know, he's just rock hard. But without that, one of the nicest blokes sitting around a table telling stories. Brilliant.
I love it.
Such a funny kid.
Yeah.
He's a really, really funny bloke.
So just coming to the end now, the craziest player you've played with?
Oh, Mark Rees.
I knew that was coming.
End of story. Mark Rees. God, Reese was just nuts. He just was. He just used to do stupid things.
Just crackers.
Just mad things, just completely off the cuff.
He was in a good group, though, for that.
He was, yeah. You know, Shakey and Kenny Mayer and Greeny. Yeah, Greeny was horrible. Greeny was.
He could be Greeny.
He was horrible.
But
Reese, yeah, Reese was nuts.
And I suppose, really, we've talked about why you're not in the game. What now for you, though? What now?
I'm trying to get back in, Tom. You know, I've been really fortunate through the pandemic because Dan Mole and Lee have let me do the commentaries and stuff at the Bescot, which I've thoroughly enjoyed. You know, and I go to lots of games. And we're fortunate, aren't we, living where we live?
Yeah.
You know, and I've got pals who are Wolves fans, Blues fans, Albion fans, Walsall fans, you know, Villa fans.
Yeah.
I was at Villa Park on Saturday. You know, I've seen Albion a couple of times, seen Walsall a few times, seen the Blues a couple of times so far this season. And, I'm very, very fortunate because I can normally get a ticket or two of people I know, which is always a bonus. So, you know, through the pandemic, it's been... I've watched a lot of live football, which has been good.
David Kelly's not finished yet.
No. I like the my strength is with the players. Yeah. I'm a good man manager, and I'm good around the group. So, as I say, I'm trying to get back in, but it will be what it will be, Tom. Yeah.
Listen, David, thanks for being with us, Ned. It's been an absolute... I've loved it. It's just flown by. I've loved every minute of it, mate. Thanks.
You'll have to do some editing on that, mate.
No, none at all. Listen, thanks for listening to myself and Ned on the Games Gone podcast. Leave a review, good, bad or indifferent. Be honest as you want. We'd love to hear from you. And again, till the next time, thanks very much.